This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Grainfield Marketing in Normal. Grainfield Marketing can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at grainfield.com.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It's January the 5th, 2006. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker of AgriVisor Services in Bloomington, Illinois. And we'll discuss the cash grain market with Bill Mayer. He's at the Grain Elevator located in Lexington, Illinois. In agricultural news, just when you thought the world was safe for U.S. biofuels, Malaysian palm oil finds a loophole in the marketplace. A new disaster aid bill is moving on Capitol Hill and will probably, eventually, include money for drought-stricken farmers in the Midwest. And McDonald's is complaining that the U.S. government has not done enough to protect people from BSE. That's otherwise known as mad cow disease. Dave Dickey will have details of these and other stories shortly. Also this half hour, we'll hear the second in the two-part series NPR has produced on how U.S. farmers are investing in Brazilian agriculture. And then, don't forget, just after the bottom of the hour, meteorologist Peter Levitt will join us to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast. It all happens right here on AM 580's Closing Market Report.
Hi, this is AM 580 Agriculture Director Dave Dickey. Want to check something you've heard in our on-air broadcasts? You can now get the opening and closing market reports and Commodity Week delivered directly to your computer for your listening convenience every day. Head over to our website at will.uiuc.edu/am/agriculture. There you will find instructions to get you started. If you need help, drop us an email at ag@will.uiuc.edu.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming on AM 580 as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com.
In Chicago, on this Thursday afternoon, futures in the wheat pit finished like this, 339 and three quarters for the March contract. It's 6.5 cents lower. The May soft red winter wheat down 6.5 cents as well. $3.49 and a quarter cents, the final price there. Hard red winter wheat in Kansas City, March contract, 385 and a half, down a nickel today. From Chicago, the corn pit, March contract, 215 and a half. They were off 2 3/4. May futures in the corn, 224 and three quarters. And off 2 1/4 for the day. July contract, 232 3/4, down 2.5. And December futures at $2.49 were down 2. Soy complex now. January beans, 608, off 13 cents. March futures at 618.5, down 13 3/4. May soybeans, 627.5, off 14 1/4. And the Noves at 638 3/4, down 9 1/4. Bean meal January futures, 188.80, down 6.30. January bean oil at 22.95. down 27. Mercantile exchange numbers, feeder cattle January contract, a dime higher today, 114.32.5. The settlement price, live cattle February contract, 96.27.5. They were off 20 cents in the Feb. Lean hogs at $64.62.5. We're down 57.5 for the day.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Those lean hogs actually up 57.5 for the day. Now on the line with us to take a look at what happened at the Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange is Dan Zwicker of AgriVisor Services out of Bloomington, Illinois. Hi, Dan. Very busy day at the board today.
Yeah, it was, Todd.
Tell me about the kind of technical damage that may or may not have been done in both the bean and the corn pits.
Well, you know, I don't know if we want to call it real damaging, but today's weakness does kind of show some underlying weakness in the market, because we had a good up day there on Tuesday to start the new year. Yesterday was kind of viewed as, you know, contrary Tuesday on Wednesday, or a day of consolidation, a day to take a breather after a big up day. Now today it was important from a technical perspective that Monday's rally or Tuesday's rally shows some follow-through activity to the upside to keep the momentum going. And instead, it kind of began to fail here, and then all of a sudden, you know, here after the first hour or so of trade, the sell orders actually begin to come in. Then you begin to hit some sell stop loss orders, and it just kind of fed on itself. Now, I think what it kind of implies is that we're going into a consolidation phase or a corrective phase of that December rally. Looking ahead at next week's report, we've got tomorrow here, and then we got when's that report? Next Thursday, I think. So you've got a few days here now, I think, to kind of consolidate and think about it and work the fundamentals. Now, fundamentally, I suppose everybody's still going to want to focus on Argentine dryness, but I think there are some weather forecasts out there that shows at least a decent shot at a meaningful rain event sometime here next week after we go into the weekend hot and dry.
That report, of course, due out from USDA, the crop production final report for the 2005 season, due out at 7:30 on Thursday morning, January the 12th. I think the quarterly grain stocks report is due out then as well.
Yeah, that's actually the most important number. They're going to take those quarterly stocks numbers that they surveyed there on December 1st, and then they're going to start backing up. They're going to look at the September numbers, and then they're going to look at what their production numbers are. So it's just about everything released next Thursday is going to pivot off of that December 1st stocks number, because that's more of a harder number to kind of work with in trying to determine whether or not they're too high or too low on production, and then it gives them an idea of kind of what usage numbers were for the first quarter of the marketing year.
In technical speak, you use the phrase a corrective measure. That usually means that you think the market may be headed up. I suppose it really depends on what happens.
A corrective measure at this point would be down in here because we've been rallying.
But the long-term trend would be higher.
Well, this will be the test of whether or not the December rally was a meaningful upturn in the marketplace. You kind of look at some of the chart action, or at least what I look at on lead futures. Corn here came out of that late November, early December low. And on when you look at lead futures, we retraced a little more than 38% of the decline that we experienced this summer. It wasn't quite 50%. On commodities, ag commodities, I kind of think 50% retracement levels hold a little more strength than probably the 38s and the 62s. And so corn kind of did a 50% retracement. This is a spot for corn to find resistance like it did and kind of enter a consolidation phase, or maybe set back a little bit from this strong rally that we've had here during December, and then regroup and then decide whether or not it wants to go on up any higher than that. So we've did some pretty good gains. The market has bought a lot of corn, bought a lot of soybeans over the past couple, 3 weeks. And then we're going into a government report that's likely to remind us how big a crops we produced. While it may be considered old news, it will remind the trade that we've got a very adequate supply of inventory around. And to get excited about a big rally, we're going to need something a little more than maybe some dryness in Argentina.
One final question for you. Any correlation between the first trading day of the year being an up day and what happens the rest of the year?
I don't have one, if there is one. Someone may have some statistics on that, but I haven't paid any attention and gathered any statistics on my own on that.
Anything else from you before I let you go?
No, that's about it, Todd.
Thanks much.
You're welcome.
Dan Zwicker is with AgriVisor Services out of Bloomington, Illinois, joins us here on the Closing Market Report that happens on Thursday afternoons.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Bob Bezdefer in Danville at 217-477-6016. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
This is the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason. At the bottom of the hour, ag meteorologist Peter Labatt will join us for a look at the agricultural weather. AM 580's own Mike Solo forecast for this evening across the two-state region. Mostly cloudy skies, a few flurries, some areas of light snows, lows ranging this evening from 20 in northwestern Illinois to near 30 in the far south. And tomorrow, he says, in Illinois, it'll be partly to mostly cloudy. In Indiana, mostly cloudy, some scattered snow showers and flurries. They'll be most numerous in the north. Highs tomorrow ranging from 30 in northeastern Indiana to 38 in southwestern Illinois. Dave Dickey is here now. He'll take a look at the agricultural news for the day.
In agricultural news, it now appears that Congress may have a new bio-based fuel to worry about. Reports are surfacing that Malaysian palm oil could begin entering the U.S. market because it could be covered by provisions of the Federal Biodiesel Credit Incentive Program. Washington Insider sources say lawmakers are considering a disaster aid bill for California, Texas, and Oklahoma. If this happens, the further expectation is that Midwestern lawmakers, including House Speaker Dennis Hastert of Illinois, will attempt to broaden the disaster package to include their farmers and ranchers. Japan may have succeeded for the first time in artificially triggering the onset of mad cow disease, as several cows inoculated with BSE material have shown symptoms of the disease. Japanese officials plan to dissect three of the cows in February to see if they were indeed infected with BSE. Meanwhile, McDonald's is saying today that USDA has not fully protected animals or people from BSE. The fast food chain says USDA needs to take stronger steps to keep infection from entering the food chain. Adding an FDA proposal released in October for public comment does not go far enough to guard against mad cow disease. In other BSE news, Thailand will lift its two-year ban on U.S. beef next week. St. Louis-based Monsanto Company posted a fiscal first quarter profit. The company earned $59 million, or 22 cents per share, in the 3 months ending November 30th. That compares with a loss of $40 million, or 15 cents per share, during the same period last year, when results were weighed down by about $300 million in non-operating expenses. Brazil's agriculture ministry says it will make almost $87 million available in credit this week to help farmers fight Asian soybean rust. Many producers in Mato Grosso do Sul are already on their second application of fungicides against soy rust. Meanwhile, harvest in Mato Grosso got underway earlier this week. Early planted soy is coming in at 45 to 50 bushels to the acre. And those hoping for a decision this month in the World Trade Organization case against the European Union's resistance to biotech crop imports will be disappointed. A ruling in the case has been delayed and now looks unlikely before next month. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, your Director of Agricultural Programming here at the WILL radio stations. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report. That's the program you're listening to right now. It airs each and every business day of the year at 2:06 in the afternoon Central Time. And I host Commodity Week, which you can hear on the weekends at 11:30 a.m. Central Time right here on this radio station, your agricultural information advantage, WILL AM 580. Well, up next, land in Brazil, as you probably already know, is a fraction of what it cost in the Midwest. Labor there is cheap, the climate also good enough to grow crops year-round. But as NPR's Julie McCarthy reports, while all those factors are attracting U.S. producers to invest in Brazilian acres, there are other issues that U.S. farmers need to be aware of before plopping down their cash.
Six generations of the Carroll family have tilled the soil of Illinois. Now the eldest heir to that legacy, 25-year-old John Carroll, is churning up the earth some 5,000 miles away in the Brazilian state of Bahia.
There's three grain bins of the horizon. Yeah. That's the end of the farm. 7.2 miles that direction. We can see 7.5 miles. The land is that flat here.
Yep, we've tested it with GPS, and you can go for miles and have a 3-foot change in altitude. Unbelievably flat.
This ancient plateau in Brazil's expanding soybean belt feels like Montana and Texas rolled into one. 7.5 million acres sprawled beneath a vast dome of blue. John Carroll careens down a 2-lane highway to the family spread, rattling off production yields. He brought his business degree and his bride to the epicenter of a boom that has put Brazil on track to surpass the United States as the world's biggest producer of soybeans. He joins about a dozen other Americans in Western Bahia, clearing the sandy scrub called Soweto and turning land once thought useless into thriving fields. Fields of dreams for Daryl Carroll. John's grandfather, Daryl, started out with 240 acres in Hancock County, Illinois, 50 years ago. He came down to check out the family's 8,000 acres of soy and cotton. 75-year-old tinkers with broken equipment, chats with farmhands, and delights in the novelty of his family's fourth season in Brazil.
Oh, it does astound me, yeah. I'm just amazed at all of this going on and all this land. And like I say, John said, when Grandpa started out, which is me, you know, he just had a smaller acreage and smaller tractors, and boy, I wouldn't have envisioned anything. It might have been a dream. It's just an ideal agricultural area, you know, it's just an ideal.
The Carroll's acreage is small compared to some Brazilian-owned farms. In the state of Mato Grosso, the governor himself owns 347,000 acres of soybeans. Grandson and grandfather Carroll share excitement over their more modest venture.
I had never even seen cotton, I told her earlier.
I never did really either, and it's all very expensive, you know. It takes probably 4 times as much money to raise a crop of cotton as a crop of beans, so you're taking more of a challenge and not taking the easy road, you know.
The Carrolls took the not-so-easy road to Brazil when Daryl's sons discovered cheap land. John Carroll says when his family bought for $220 an acre here, compared to $4,000 an acre in Illinois, they were merely heeding the advice of billionaire Warren Buffett.
He says if you can buy dollars for 40 cents, you should just buy all of them you can and assume it's going to work out. So we came here and looked around. We really thought, like, we were buying a lot of dollars for 40 cents.
Rain halts the planting this day. 70 inches will fall over the next 6 months, then nothing the rest of the year. That suits young John Carroll, who says the long dry season preserves the crops and the machinery. John converses in Portuguese with his 50 salaried farmhands who get room and board on this 365-day-a-year farm. Bartolomeo Gomes Ferreira is a cotton specialist who earns about $550 a month, 4 times the minimum wage. He says the American farmers set a standard for Brazil.
Personally, and most people will say the same thing, it's wonderful working for Americans. Americans come, they hire you, and they pay exactly what they promise to pay you, and treat you very well, with dignity.
The Carrolls also cultivate 13,000 acres for a group of investors from the U.S. Foreigners generally cannot own land without a local partner, but the potential for profit has people beating a path to John Carroll's door.
What I've heard from institutional investors, from hedge funds, from pension funds, the big money, if you can show us a track record, 3 years, 5 years of a 10% return, there are hundreds of millions of dollars to come down.
But progress has a price. Conservation International predicts that the Soweto, or savanna of central Brazil, could disappear by the year 2030, endangering hundreds of species and degrading important sources of water. By law, the Carrolls keep 20% of their property in its natural state. But conservationist Paulo Gustavo says not everyone does, and enforcement can be lax.
Now, of course, there is bribe, there is incompetence, there is everything, you name it.
The farming bonanza is also transforming the economic landscape. Business is brisk at the dealership of John Deere, one of several American giants heavily invested here. In the restaurants springing up in the boomtown Luiz Eduardo, agro-businessmen of the big transnationals buzz about Brazil as the new frontier. Former ambassador to Washington, Rubens Barbosa, says like the U.S., Brazil is a melting pot that welcomes foreigners and their money.
There's no discrimination against foreigners here. And if there is a farmer, American farmer or Italian farmer, whatever, if they develop land, if they plant, if they employ people, they are well treated.
Iowa-based agricultural consultant Kelvin Leibold says the warm reception is alluring.
There's such an openness. There's such a welcoming, people wanting you to bring your money down and invest. And that's a lot different than what the culture has become in Iowa in the last 20 years.
But Leibold also cautions that American farmers face the Portuguese language, poor roads, tangled bureaucracy, tropical fungus, and no federal crop insurance. Even as he rides Brazil's historic agricultural wave, John Carroll acknowledges there is nothing natural about Americans farming in Brazil. But grandfather Darrell says there's nothing unnatural about the risks.
Oh, I guess the pioneering spirit of all of us to branch out and do this. And this area was never farmed in a million years, and we cleaned it off and are farming. It's just like when they settled the Old West. Yeah, it's hard to imagine.
As it was hard for Darrell Carroll to imagine 5 years ago that the youngest generation of his family would be joining the juggernaut that is farming in Brazil. Julie McCarthy, NPR News.
The Carl Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carl Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite agricultural programming at WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
I'm Todd Gleason. This is the Closing Market Report. Bill Mayer, Roach Ag Marketing, out of Lexington, Illinois, joins us from the elevator there to tell us what's been happening in the cash grain market. Hi, Bill.
Hello, Todd.
Let's talk about cash grain movement in your area. We heard from Kay Whitlock yesterday that in the Terre Haute area that farmers were selling corn at a pretty brisk pace in this last rally. Is that the case where you are?
Yeah, a lot of corn, a lot of beans both really moved on this rally over the last week or so here.
And farmers closing up the bins after today's drop in the market, you think?
Yeah, we sure did see a slowdown in cash movement. There was some, you know, after the close yesterday afternoon yet, but once we had the overnight down, and this morning, today, it's been pretty slow. We've seen some basis weakness over the last week because of the cash movement, but really not as much as one might think with the amount of grain, I believe, that's moved here.
And it seemed to me that possibly there was quite a bit of grain that must have moved, given what the services were saying about today's downturn in the market, that it was simply commercials coming back in and protecting their positions after buying so much grain in the last week or so.
Yeah, I think that and the lack of the fund buying today. I mean, just to give you an example there, on Tuesday we had about 27,000 contracts that the funds bought. And that's a big amount, you know, really to only move the market up 4 cents like we did. So we had to have some commercial selling against that fund buying even on Tuesday and yesterday.
And what are the bids there in Lexington for the day?
$1.95 on the cash corn and $5.86 on the beans.
Any bit of advice we need to pass on before I let you go?
Well, I think that if you didn't get anything moved on this rally, it's always hard to make those sales after the market turns lower, but don't hesitate to go ahead and get something done if you didn't get anything done.
Thanks much, Bill.
Okay.
Bill Mayer is with Roach Ag Marketing. He's out of Lexington, Illinois. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report on Thursday afternoons to take a look at the cash grain market. In about 2 minutes, we'll talk with agricultural meteorologist Peter Levitt about the weather. Your local newscast comes up next.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jim Meadows. Former Chicago gang member Jose Padilla has been taken from a Navy brig and put on a plane to Miami to face terrorism charges in civilian court. Padilla is the alleged al-Qaeda operative who was held as an enemy combatant for more than 3 years. The Associated Press reports the transfer took place today after a legal battle that went all the way to the Supreme Court. The corruption trial of former Illinois Governor George Ryan is on hold, after his co-defendant Larry Warner took a nasty fall outside a downtown Chicago restaurant and was rushed to a hospital. Attorneys say the 67-year-old Warner fell while the court was in recess for lunch. They say they believed he was taken to a hospital by ambulance. After being on the market for the past decade, the Village Mall in Danville has new owners. Howard and Mills, a California-based developer, has purchased the 35-year-old indoor shopping mall from its Switzerland-based owners. The firm's director of acquisitions, Jason Lind, says they're talking with several new potential tenants, and he says they're in final negotiations to bring a Dunham Sporting Goods store to the mall at the location that once housed a JCPenney's. A Republican lawmaker has filed a bill to outlaw abortion in Indiana, unless it's to end a pregnancy that threatens the life or health of the mother. State Representative Troy Woodruff of Vincennes says he filed the bill yesterday, in part because the makeup of the U.S. Supreme Court has changed. If passed, any state anti-abortion law would be appealed to the Supreme Court to see if the court's Roe v. Wade ruling stands. Owners of dogs, cats, and other animals are no longer just pet owners in Bloomington, Indiana. Under the city's revamped animal code, they're owner/guardians. In adopting the change last month, Bloomington joined 13 American cities that recognize guardian as a term to describe the relationship between humans and their pets. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
I'm Todd Gleason, AM 580 Agriculture. We're joined now by Pete Levitt to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast. Hi, Pete.
Hi. How's it going, Todd?
Oh, we had a great New Year, a wonderful Christmas here. I suspect you had the same there in Massachusetts.
Yeah, it was a little bit more active weather-wise here, but we got through it just fine.
It was a beautiful weather here, actually. It was very nice over the entire holiday season. And I hear that it's not too terribly bad in South America for the growing crops, corn in Argentina and soybeans in Brazil.
That's true. Brazil had gone through a couple of dry weeks a few weeks ago and needed some moisture, and they needed moisture. They got the moisture. So we had some good showers in southern Brazil. That's going to boost the soybean outlook a little bit there. And also in the center-west region of Brazil, they've had some showers to sustain the moisture for the soybeans in their summer crops. So that's pretty good there. In the Argentine, that's the area where there have been areas of dryness in the Argentine. Some of the regions picked up a little moisture this past week, but for the most part, the summer grains and oil seeds in the southwestern growing areas are on the dry side, and they need moisture there. The dryness further east is good for the wheat harvest, so that's not a problem there.
And then as you take a look here in the United States, what can we expect in the Midwest and the Great Plains for the winter wheat crop?
Well, okay, for the Midwest, the weather continues to be unseasonally mild. Temperatures this next week are going to average anywhere from 8 to 10 degrees above normal, warmest over the weekend, and then just less warm. It's not even going to get really cool, and then during the week, and then a little bit warmer toward the week. Any precipitation will be mostly on the light side. The big problem is you'll have the warmth, you won't have that much sunshine, because this time of year, when it gets so mild, it tends to kick in clouds fairly easily. But there'll be patches of sun here and there, and it looks very comfortable for that area. And so the mild spell continues. In the southern plains, we do have problems for the crop. That's where the real problem is. It's the southern half of the southern plains hard winter wheat crop, where it's been exceptionally dry. We've all heard about the brush fires in Oklahoma and Texas, and that's just an evidence of the extreme dryness down there. So the crop conditions are really pretty bad in Texas. They're not quite as bad in Oklahoma. They're not so good in Kansas. As you come northward, the conditions improve. But all in all, this is not a good start, at least not a good wintering period for the hard winter wheat belt.
And anything else before we let you go for the day?
Well, yeah, I guess we do have to talk about the fact that we still have a tropical storm going in the Atlantic. Just to make the season complete, Zeta is back again as a tropical storm.
Oh,
no
correct.
Threat to anybody, but January, tropical storms, that's enough to make a weather story somewhere.
We appreciate it, Pete.
Mm-hmm.
And Peter Levitt joins us here on the Closing Market Report on Thursday afternoons. Hey, one thing to come back to. I mentioned as we went into the settlement prices, the different classes of wheat and what they're used for. Suggested durum wheat, of course, used for pasta. That is the case. The hard wheats, hard red spring wheat, which is grown in the northern part of the U.S. in the upper Midwest, and the hard red winter wheats. We just talked about those in the Great Plains and the southern Southwest. Are grown for breads. White winter wheat is for that as well. The soft red winter wheats that we grow here used primarily for cakes and crackers and such. So that's a quick look at some of the classes of wheat. There are many more. You can find a whole lot if you just search the web. Speaking of that, visit our website at WILL.UIUC.EDU. Click on AM and then Agriculture, and you can catch up on everything we've been talking about this afternoon, or the opening or pre-opening market report right there on our website. You have a great afternoon if you're on your way home from the Crop Protection Technology Conference here on campus. Thanks so much for coming. The last couple of days, those of us that work for University of Illinois Extension, the College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences, and U of I Extension surely do appreciate your time and effort. Have a good afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 85 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.